You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode number 249 for the week of October 6th, 2019. Welcome back, listeners, to the longest-running podcast dedicated to the epic glory of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. And we used to talk about Game of Thrones, too. As always,
this is Amin.
And this is Kyle. And it's guys' night out here, Amin.
Yeah. Or guys' night in, whatever number. Whatever
guys'
number
night somewhere.
Yeah.
Guys at the bar. It's the two of us. We're trying to get a hold of Ashley. And so she may join us at some point. Who knows? She's out there in the ether and she may show up. And Mimi won't be joining us. She just had child number two.
Yeah,
I just saw that. Congratulations, Mimi, if you listen to this podcast. I don't think you do, but...
I mean, congrats to her. I remember when we started, that was the thing. We predicted people will be having kids before the next book comes out, and at least one of us is heading that way.
And two kids now.
Two kids, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. Crazy.
Girl or a boy?
I think it is a girl. If my computer could load up Facebook really fast, I would be able to find out that information. Yeah, she got a kid. Let's see. Oh, my phone's going really fast. Let's see. June Elizabeth is her name. Oh, Juna. I'm sorry, not Juna. J-U-N-A. Mimi probably has some weird way of saying that, though.
Mimi comes up with cool names for her kids and also does not use Ice and Fire names, which is good.
good names,
as you
yes.
learn. Well, I guess you could do that now because you know the results, although Mimi doesn't know the results. She didn't watch the show, but
I remember hearing about that. Oh man, yeah, that sucks for them, huh?
Well, I mean, the show is over now, and we were just chatting about that a bit before the episode started, but I kind of relish it in a way that it's finally over and people were pissed off for a while or enjoyed it, but they just moved on and we can kind of just settle back into the book environment.
Yep. Yeah, it has settled down, and those who hated it and can't stand it have moved on to be angry about other things.
That's
and
right.
Those who enjoyed the whole thing still enjoy it.
Yeah, and I mean, although the thing with the books is, I mean, I think this 2020 is going to be a key year. Like, I mean, it seems to me the hints are...
Predictions.
The hints are that the book is near and it's coming. But if it doesn't come in 2020... I think that's
what hints
bad.
Are you talking about?
Well, the hints I was saying back in 2014.
Then. So no new hints.
I don't know. Didn't George say that like, he'll be locked up? You could lock him up if he doesn't get it up by like next summer or something.
I don't want to talk about George getting it up. Well, I don't know. I feel like every day I see a new article about George saying something like, oh, things have changed now, or I didn't like the ending of the show, or I've got myself locked up writing the books now, or yeah. I can't write the books, I'm doing this. I feel like every day there's a different headline.
Well, that's the real fake news, like those things. Like, they take like one line and then just write all this random stuff and put a billion ads on it. But 2020 will be key. Like, if the book comes in 2020, great, we got a book to review. But if it doesn't, I think a lot of people are going to fizzle out.
Oh,
that's going to, I think that's the key. I mean, if the people have already fizzled out already, but I think if you get past 2020, that's.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. When I've been gone for a couple weeks here and I'm back. And when I started to I went to pick up my copy of A Storm of Swords to like read the chapters we're going to go over tonight. And I was like, oh, God, I don't know about this. And then all of a sudden I started reading and I was like, oh no, I'm back in.
Yeah, these were good chapters. There's good material in there, and that's the thing. If George can produce back to the left, I mean, even in Dance of Dragons, a lot of it was good. The North stuff and different areas. Like, I want to see George's writing again, no matter what he writes. I just want to see him write something, even if he was writing back like science fiction again or something. Just don't be stuck at something. That's what I want to see.
And we've still got two books to cover after we finish this one.
That's right. I mean, we're reading to the rate that he's writing, so it's matching that. But imagine we were at the end of the books now. What else? I mean, that would be it. I'd probably put the podcast on hiatus till the next book comes out.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Tons of other podcasts that are like, let's do the first half of this book, and then the second, and they've got six episodes of the entire series, and it's like, well, what do we talk about now? Remember when this podcast first started, you used to have like themed episodes, specific things we'd talk about?
It did. I mean, those are good actually, but then there's only so many you could do, and then I guess you got to update them later. But when we started the chapter reread, we were doing like five chapters an episode, which is too much. Like we couldn't, we can't.
We were doing five?
Yeah, we're doing like five at a time.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
What drug was I on back then?
One or two is the way to go, especially one if you have a guest or something else to talk about. So. Well, we're getting there. Like I'm looking at my Storm of Swords book. There's not a lot left here. Like we're near the end of that. And for the next one, we might read them together, like as a single book. Maybe I'm thinking for the last two books combined. Ooh, read.
What do they call it? A dance feast or feast dance. Of dancing
Or something or other. There's other words.
That's a terrible title. We got to come up with something.
That
better.
That was the original name. I think they changed. Yeah.
It's a feast dance. Okay.
Yeah. Dragons and crows or something.
Speaking of guests, are there any guests that we tried to get that we never did?
You mean like we tried and we couldn't get them on the show?
Yes. Dennis, obviously George.
George, yes. Although I think the problem with George was that by the time we invited him, the show had come out and then the show was controlling all interviews. So that wasn't going to work because we couldn't get really, like, they wouldn't give us views. I suppose now we could ask for him, but he's probably just not going to do that many interviews till he's given the book out. I suppose we could try. We would have to pull back Mimi for an episode to be there.
Sure, she would.
That's a good point. Maybe I'll send them. Although I guess the prequels are still running, so maybe that still blocks. Like it was only HBO that would have, like, whoever the person was that was scheduling interviews, including George. So I don't know if that still applies now or not. I guess we could try. That's a good point. Let me make a note. Email.
He revealed that he was finished the book on our podcast.
That would be the crowning achievement. and then probably wouldn't record or something.
Oh yeah, true. George, can we talk to you again? No.
No, but George has appeared by soundbite on the podcast before, right?
This pisses me off, okay? Yeah. Because I got all flustered because I was meeting George and talking to him. And I got the soundbite, but he doesn't say, "This is George R. R. Martin." So I think we put it on the episode, and I was like, "This is going to be awesome." And nobody cared about it.
What does he say? He just said, "You're listening to a podcast?"
Or... Yeah, he's like, "Yeah, you're listening to a podcast of Ice Fire," or something like that. He doesn't say, "This is George R. R. Martin, and you're listening." So
why is this random guy introducing?
Yeah, it could have been anybody.
I'll have to look up to see if you saw that audio clip, but maybe I'll add that to this.
I was so upset because after it happened and I walked away from George, like, I knew it, and I was like, I can't go back and ask
George, him. George, you didn't say your name. Can you redo it? It's like, what? No.
God damn it. And he's like, yeah, no problem, Mike. I'll do it again.
Well, why not send an invite? I mean, we've met him before. We've had dinner before him. I know his agent. Not his agent, but like his, you know, the people that assist him. So.
Bodyguard.
Yeah. Bodyguard / agent / like all that, like organizer. So I suppose we could send a invitation. Why not? Oh, give it a try.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe when we finish Storm of Swords. No, we still got 100 pages left.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll have George come for the last episode of Storm of Swords. So it's like 20 years later. It's like, here, you can talk about Storm of Swords.
Shit. So is there any news or...
It's a good question. We were chatting about... I had thought there only just been the one prequel, right? Approved.
You're going to call me out, aren't you?
Let's see.
I thought I heard something about a second show. Let's see.
George R. R. Martin explains why The Winds of Winter is taking so long to write. Winterscoming.net. There's the news. Let's see.
So one of the prequels is all about Targaryens, right? The
Yes, I think so, right? Let's see.
House Targaryen.
Is it approved, though? It's different. They had a few listed, but I don't know which one.
Well, I think you make the pilot, and then...
Oh, I see what you're saying. To see if it's approved based on that. So they are.
Yeah, I remember Game of Thrones had a pilot, and there was a different actress playing Daenerys. Yeah. Okay, Game of Thrones' second prequel in the works. Let me click on this bad boy via The Hollywood Reporter. All right, let's see. Game of Thrones' second prequel in the works at HBO. The pilot, which is near a deal with the premium cable network, would focus on House Targaryen. Oh, wait, that's the one we know about. Be based on Fire and Blood. Well, wait, what was the... Oh, yes, that's right. Because there's the Targaryen one, but then there's the... The first one that we had heard about was The Age of Heroes.
Hmm.
And the Targaryen one is the second one.
But how do you feel about it? Like, do you even feel excited? Or do I just feel, eh? Like, I just, like, I'll watch it when it comes out, but I don't feel it particularly.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Especially with, if they do the Targaryens and Civil War and the Blackfyre, then all of a sudden you're introducing this main element of history that no one ever mentioned in the show, in Game of Thrones. So,
but you can be quite, I mean, spinoffs or sequel prequels or whatever, like, they can be quite tenuously connected to the material as long as, like, they get the fandom to come over to it.
Like, it can, yeah.
So they could do that.
And then the Age of Heroes one I'm weird about, because the Age of Heroes ends when the others take over the world, right? Or take...
Or come into...
The Long Night.
Yeah, like the first time around, all of that.
Ends the Age of Heroes. So isn't, like, the ultimate baddie and the build-up basically going to be the same as Game of Thrones was? I mean...
Hmm. Yeah, it's just a repeat, right? It's almost like cyclical. The prophecy is just going to happen.
Except the technology won't be as advanced.
Well, maybe it'll be more advanced. They lost technology. Although, let's talk about that later. Should we get into the chapters? Because one of the chapters actually has something technological that was interesting. The second chapter.
Absolutely. But, let's do it. The first chapter we're going to talk about tonight, everybody, is A Storm of Swords, Sansa 6. I don't have anything written up. Do you, Amin?
No, I'll summarize it briefly. I mean, this is where Sansa is going with Littlefinger. They've escaped from King's Landing. Well, she's escaped from King's Landing secretly, and they go to Littlefinger's holdfast or, like, fort or seat or whatever. Doesn't even have a name.
Yeah, it's not quite a castle.
Yeah, so he just basically complains about where he came from, and you see his kind of pitiful small folk or household or whatever. Like, his household is pretty small.
it's very pathetic.
Yeah.
And just sheep pellets everywhere.
Yeah, but it, in that environment, it's kind of a very bleak environment, and it's raining, and it's not much going on. Peter explains a lot to Sansa. Like, he gives a lot of interesting information, especially the first time having read this, like, in this point in the books. And then Lysa comes there, and they end up getting married. Peter doesn't really want to do it there, but he has no choice. So they get married, and Sansa gets to learn what her aunt is truly like.
A sex maniac.
If only it was that, but just her character is really annoying in this chapter. So, that's it in a nutshell. But there's a lot to be talked about in this chapter. Like, there's a lot.
Well, let's dive in. What's the first thing you want to talk about?
Just Peter's half truths again at the start, because for example, like when Sansa's thinking about Tyrion, Peter's like, oh, don't even think about him. His hands are not clean. He just gave up his first wife when he got bored to his father's guardsmen. Well, I mean, that happened, but that's not quite how it happened, right? Although, I mean, maybe Peter, it could be that in that particular scenario, Peter believes it. Like, I mean, that could be the way people thought it, like, have been told the story or heard about it. But he always tells kind of half-truths in general anyway. There's some truth in it, but not quite.
Yeah, and you just hit the nail on the head for me. I'm curious if he's changing the narrative a little bit for his benefit, telling it to Sansa, or if he truly believes that that's how it played out, or if that's a common way people believe it played out, that weren't privy to it, or, you know, there when it happened.
Especially, wouldn't it be exactly, he heard it by distance, and that would maybe fit more of the character than to be like, Tywin ordered it to be happen. They'd be like, well, why did that happen? This is an explanation that maybe, but even if it isn't, certainly Littlefinger would tell the half-truth that way. And it goes back again where Sansa thinks that her mother had slept with Littlefinger. Again, that's a half-truth. Again, that's another one that maybe Peter deluded himself, but I don't think quite so. I think he must have realized that it wasn't...
Does he say he slept with Catelyn?
I mean, because he told her that earlier, so then she thinks about that here. She says, oh, like, my mother might have slept with him and loved him or something, but that's not the truth either. It's a half-truth, right?
It was
Lysa.
Wait, does Peter actually say he slept with her in here?
He does. Not in this chapter, but in earlier chapters. That's why that's why she remembers that. Gotcha. I mean, there's an argument to be said that maybe, again, Peter is self-deluding himself there. That's possible, but I think he probably would have figured it out. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe.
The night of, he maybe was deluding himself, but afterward, I think he would have figured it out. Unless he slept with Lysa twice, he would have known that Lysa had the kid and all of that. I mean, that's touched upon here. Like, let's have another baby. Well, they already had one before that was aborted. years ago, so he knew of that. Okay, so that's kind of Littlefinger's character, and then you see his household, and it's kind of like it's weird because he kind of still likes his household, like he grew up with them, but so you see that side of him that he actually cares about them a bit. But yeah, it's pretty.
It seems like very little.
not the land, but the people. He seems to get along well with his own people.
Okay.
In a way, I don't know, like with Kella.
Yeah.
And you learn about himself as well, like his grandfather. No, his great grandfather's from Braavos because his grandfather's father was from Braavos. Just the visual imagery here too of like the fingers. This area, it reminded me when I went up to Scotland, the Scottish Highlands. It was kind of like that when it was very rainy and bleak, and sheep everywhere. Except it's just by the water here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It kind of matched that imagery of when I went tour. It was still, it's still beautiful too that they're there. I'm just saying there's areas where it's just like grass and lots of sheep.
Peter having this Braavosi heritage kind of backs the theory of him being replaced with a faceless man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's various references to this kind of Braavos background. I'm trying to remember what else, like maybe that Sansa may be his downfall or something. When she smashes the giant, he could be the giant of. There's like various theories people have spun from that background, but yeah. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, we learn about his father's sigil,
yeah,
which is the head of the Titan.
Yeah, there's something to be said there. Like, I mean, he seems to. I mean. He himself was, you know, who's supposed to have been Sansa's fake mother here? Somebody from the Free Cities. I don't know if it was Braavos or where it said that.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be somebody from Braavos.
Yeah, Braavos. So you may have Braavos connections. Like even the false story is a Braavos connection, but it's possible he has connections there.
Your mother was a gentlewoman of Braavos, daughter of a merchant prince. Gulltown, yep.
Even when he's telling Sansa for how to take her Elaine role, he gives information there that's kind of interesting. Because Sansa wants a better backstory, and he's like, no, just be my natural daughter. It's rude to pry into that origin. I was like, oh, that's true, I guess. That's a good way of hiding it, right? No one's going to really ask, well, when did you bed some random woman and have this natural child, right? It's rude to pry into that. And then also he's just like, hey, just read from verses. That'll keep people bored. They won't want to question.
No, it's totally true.
I'm not going to ask you lots of questions about where you're from. Peter has a blood orange here. So blood orange theory.
There we go. Nice.
Not only does he have it in the fruit, like I see that, but he eats the orange and he says, oh
it's a huge blood orange.
Yeah, he loves the orange, but he loathes the sticky fingers, he says. So, so Peter is the type that would partake in that. So,
We learn his mother was named Elaine.
Yeah, that was interesting too. Don't know much.
So he definitely mentions both his parents in here, which is, I feel like.
Oh, that's right.
More personal than we ever get.
That's right, and we learned that. Well, you see it. he himself has said it. He's like, hey, look at me. How high have I come now from such low origins? Right. He's kind of trying to show off to Sansa partly as well. You can see that, like, because she sees it. There's something in his eyes. She's like, what is he amused? Or it's like this creepy look. That he gives her, starting to get obsessed with her a bit. He's starting that road, but
creepy.
He talks about when he was young, he went with his father to some hermit there who's supposed to give prophecies and said he's going to be a great man. And Peter himself scoffs at that. He's like, oh, he just did it for the wine, probably. But that's kind of interesting that he had a similar. I mean, Cersei had an experience with a prophecy teller, though. With that one, it was far more. You can say her powers are established. This is just some random hermit, but it's just kind of cool.
It just sounds like some old homeless dude in a cave who's like, I need wine and I'll just tell you
exactly.
Things.
Like, especially like the ruler of that area comes to you. You're not going to say your son's going to amount to nothing. You couldn't say he's going to be a great man.
Yeah, he's going to be a great man. Give me that wine.
Yeah. But supposedly had a gift of prophecy, like was well known. So that's kind of interesting. One line I saw in here, I mean, just Peter just explains so much about the game here, right? Game of Thrones and how it's played. And how he, like, kind of, when he went to the Tyrells, look, Sansa's just trying to guess, like, who actually poisoned Joffrey, and he's going through various people that are in his power. The Kettleblacks are in his power, but they didn't do it, so he reveals that he's connected with their father.
Yeah, that I actually did not remember from last time I read this.
Mm.
I was like, oh, I didn't realize that the Kettleblacks are sort of controlled by Littlefinger, not in... total, but like there's that connection.
Put into place by him. Yeah.
Right.
And in a way, as you said, that each other player or piece thinks that, like, the Tyrion thinks that he's controls them. Cersei thinks that she's controlling him, and then it was him that put him in there in the first place. So
yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And he does mention later on, he's like, one of them, since he joins cards, a little unruly. So, you know, he doesn't have full control of them.
Well, that's the thing. He says, like, that one that joined the Kingsguard, the White Cloak, did something, even for a man like him. That's kind of interesting. So it kind of still, it was a benefit to that man. It made him, like, maybe not want to listen as much. Like, it does something to the man toward the positive, even to somebody who already starts so bad. That was right. Kind of interesting, that line.
Mm.
And then another time when he's talking about how he was talking with the Tyrells, he didn't openly say anything bad about Joffrey. He praised them, but then he had his men spread the rumors. Like the level of deceit there, and then he had the people sing the songs about the Kingsguard, so Loras would join it. And then this line I should have put in my essay about singers: a harp can be as dangerous as a sword in the right hands. That's a great line from there that would have fit there.
Yeah, it is.
There's just so many. It's just like line after line after line. Each paragraph, then it's like next paragraph. And it got rid of, like, it would have been hard for Loras to find a bride in lands, and it would be doubly difficult in Loras' case. It's like, oh, wow. Like, it's just hinting at Loras is gay. Like, it's hard to find lands for a third son and doubly difficult for a gay son in this society. So whatever.
Yeah, he gives out so much info.
Yeah. The Great Western Alliance will be preserved for a time. So he's kind of already talking about, like, the breakdown of that alliance, but.
Yeah,
what's happening?
And this is where he talks about who done it.
Yeah, he gives it up that it's the Queen of Thorns.
And yeah, he says it without saying it. That's right. Like, he never specifically says it was her, but he leads Sansa to make that deduction. Yeah,
that's right, because he had to wear the head,
and I'm sure someone came and asked you and fixed it, and yeah,
you just had to wear, what is it, the hairnet that had the poison, like the gem that could be used for poison.
So I like it. He's teaching Sansa.
That's right. And he does that more later too. Like, just that's their relationship from this chapter moving forward. I mean, even in the past, he gave her some lines, but he's almost like, he's tutoring her in the game, basically.
Right.
And
it's like, Margaery needed to be queen, but she didn't need Joffrey
to be queen. Yeah. So that worked for them. To get Tommen in there.
And when is it? So Margaery, is he calling Margaery a slut here?
Well, not quite, actually, because he says, like, she'll keep her maidenhood, so she still has it. I mean, obviously, she's like 16 or something.
She doesn't want it. Margaery will marry Tommen. She'll keep her queenly crown and her maidenhead, neither of which she especially wants.
Yeah, well, I mean, she was here.
I mean, I guess not a slut, but they're just saying saying that Margaery's like eager to have some sex,
well,
right?
Why not, right? Like, now she's gonna have to wait like another 5 years before Tommen can actually do anything, right? So it's kind of a like, and remember that 16 is different. I mean, even 16 in our age, people are interested in sex. 16 in their age is like, okay, I should be married and having kids now, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
That scene earlier than that could be a little bit tricky for them. I mean, they physiologically they. It's risky, even they talked about that, right?
Interesting.
So then Lysa comes there, and she's not happy to hear that. Like, this is before Littlefinger reveals to her later about that it's actually Sansa. Like, to hear about that Littlefinger has a natural child, and so he tries to diffuse the situation. You can see he just said the wench is dead.
He's trying left and right.
The wench is dead. Yeah. He's like, wench is dead. Like, he doesn't put any weight to it. He's just like, oh, it's nothing. Just
exactly
because he knows she'll be jealous otherwise, right? Then we hear from her about Jon Royce trying to stir up trouble, wants to call the Banners. I wish Jon Royce had been a little bit less honorable and actually had just done so. It just like Lysa Arryn actually has no real authority. People respect her, but he could have just called a bunch of guys and left. Like, he could have done so, and maybe got people, like, they were just a little bit too respectful. And Rob could have used that. Like, he needed that support. Yeah.
But why do you think he didn't? Because he's so honorable?
He's honorable, yeah. So he didn't want to just outright not follow Lysa and just, you know, even his own forces would have been nice. I'm sure he could have he paired up with several of the lords, big lords and ladies there. He could have just left with a large army and just not ignore. Lysa hasn't, like, her authority is through Jon and is, like, you know, out of respect in a way, but she can't enforce it. She has, like, no army of herself to enforce it. So he could have just done so, but And that really, I mean, in general, Lysa really just screwed over her family. I mean, Rob really needed their army, or even just their fleet. Would it be nice to help to go through there instead of trying to do his north plan? He could just sail through the Vale, but they weren't allowed to go there. So that's one of the reasons Lysa's annoying. I mean, you still have to admit, though, like, I mean...
But you know she's not... She's doing it because Peter told her.
That's right. And you have to keep that in mind. I mean, that's the way I like that George writes. Even though Lysa is annoying and she did all these things, she ultimately is used by Peter and also had a tragic backstory, right? Like, she lost her child, and then she lost multiple children after that. She just, like,
multiple,
imagine if she had had a bunch of kids, she probably would be a lot happier, right? That's what she wanted.
And right. That's gonna mess her up mentally, right. In the head. Yeah.
And not only that, like, I mean, she could be delusional here, where she says, "Oh, the seed is weak and old. That's why that happened." Well, that may be the case, but it may also be the case that first abortion may have caused some harm because it was so late and it was taken with, like, that. I mean, this is not even a medical abortion, right? It's taking poison, basically, right? That may have also had an impact that she had trouble, like, with other children. So that's really tragic for her. And you imagine if she had like 4 or 5 kids and she could focus on that, and maybe she would be happier,
right?
And that was denied her, and so then she just had the one hope that she could be with Peter again sometime in the future. I mean, she talks about the hint is there. She talks about poison, and it's a woman's weapon, and it's not dishonorable for a woman to use it. Well, she actually used poison, right? She's hinting at that. She's not going to reveal it, obviously, but that line shows that she did it. Like, later on we find out that she actually did poison John Arryn.
I like this when she's like, "I want to get married immediately," and he goes, "No, let's go back to the Vale in front of all the lords."
That's
and
right.
Everything.
He wants a public and wedding, like, and get that.
He wants it public, and so he can get the damn Vale, and everybody.
Right. There's
nobody
no challenge
will...
to it. No, she wants to get married now. She wants to be in bed, and he's like, "I bed you now and wed you later." So Peter,
like, you can tell he's trying everything, and eventually he's like, "Shit!"
Yeah, first he's trying to resist, and then he sees that's not going to work. Well, he's like, "Well, that's hilarious." Nope, she wants to get wed. So then he has to do that. He's not happy with that, but he can only resist so much, right? It's going to piss her off to some point. So
right, exactly.
So then they get married, and then she's super loud. She's,
oh, God. And she was.
Yeah.
That's disturbing.
Yeah. Some people have read this where after so many years of silence and whisperings, it's almost like, so they have slept together. Other times they just had to be quiet about it, but I don't think that's the case. I think really she had to wait to this moment, and that's why she was so loud about it.
It makes me, the fact that she wouldn't bed and then wed him makes me think that they haven't had sex.
That's a good point. Otherwise, why?
She would be like, "Sure, okay, let's, yeah."
Yeah, it would just be
fuck.
No worse than what it was before, which would be an adultery while she was still married to John, right? So, yeah. And they probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to do so anyway. Like, I think Littlefinger would have been careful about that, because it's kind of interesting because John, John put Littlefinger into a position of power initially. Because of her, I guess he knew that about that whole thing of the kid and all that. I mean, that might have been, first of all, John had no choice but to marry somebody of quote soiled or whatever, right? Because he needed the swords. But actually, like, the fact that she had a kid was also beneficial to him. He needed to somebody who was fertile. So maybe that wasn't, he just needed somebody who could give him kids, and he needed the swords. So he had to marry. So I think he was aware of the whole, what happened. Now, did he 100% know that it was Peter that fathered the child? I don't know. That's kind of interesting dynamic. Did he know that was Peter the one? It's interesting the other way. If he knew and he still just made use of them, well, good on him in a way, although it ended up badly in the end. Or did he not know? He put Peter because she asked. But why? Like, because she just asked generally? Or did he know that he was special to her? In any event, no matter what was the case, I don't think there was any room for an affair there. I don't think it would have worked. I think Peter would have been careful, and it would have been too dangerous for that. And in fact, the fact that he didn't sleep with her would have... given her motivation, he kept the control in her, right? He's like, do this, I'll be with you one day, right? Like, that seems to be the way that it was planned, because he told her to poison John.
Yeah.
So they sleep together, and she's happy. They're married, and have the whole wedding thing.
So did he have... Was it his plan to tell her who Sansa is? Who Elaine is?
Yes.
The entire time? Just...
He just couldn't say it in public because there's all those other people there, right? So he needed the story, and then the story needs to be stuck to, but then he told her in private because, there's no other reason to why he would have changed his mind. I think that was his plan the whole time, to tell her, and then that would get rid of any issue of like, well, who is she?
Yeah, I guess it would be hard if he didn't tell her. I'm just trying to think, like, was it his plan to keep the secret the whole time, and then maybe she brought it up, like, after they had sex, and she's like, "Who's that girl? Who's that girl?" And it was another thing he couldn't like not tell
deny
her.
It.
He like tried a couple times, and she kept persisting, so he had to like tell her.
It's possible, though. On the other hand, he's trusted her with important things, and also she's not going to tell anyone. So
that's the thing too. If there's anybody he can trust with a secret, it's her, because they started the whole game.
Look what she did so far to this point. And also, she's not going to tell anyone it's Sansa. That's going to screw herself, right? She's scared that people will find out it's Sansa, right? So it's in her own benefit to keep it secret anyway. So, yep. And also, that also kind of like, now she wants her to marry Robert, her son. And that can happen, like, she wants it quickly. Well, whatever. Like, that'll just keep Sansa in a safe place for now. And then Littlefinger can use it later for whatever purpose. Like, he has various plans, right? So. Yep. I think he planned to tell her. He couldn't tell her in public. Obviously, he had to hide it, tell her in private.
Okay, makes sense.
So then the singer is there, Marillion, I think, right?
Marillion, yeah.
Me Too moment, basically, right? Thankfully, Peter is wise enough to have kept... I don't know if he just knew of Marillion in general, because Marillion, I think, has raped other people. Like, people had heard that. Maybe he knew of that, or just in general, he kept Lothar Brun around to keep Sansa safe, but... I think Marillion has raped other people and it's known, but Lysa didn't punish him for it because he's a favorite of her.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's scary in this moment. He's like, I can write a little song about Peter and have him like taken care of immediately.
Yeah, he doesn't care about Peter, and he's just like, I'm sure you wouldn't want your clothes ripped. It's like, what the hell? Like, it's a freaky moment. And then she thinks it's the Hound that's there, right? Because he hears her raspy voice, but it's actually Lothar
Brun. Yeah, because she thinks about the Hound a bit, but then she wakes up next to that dog. What?
Yeah, she's right. She thinks about the Hound several times this chapter, right? She has like the dream. And
where is Ashley? This is where she needs to pop
right.
in.
Was this Ashley online here? Let's see. No, she's still away. Did she email?
God damn it, Ashley.
You're missing the dreams. His dream that she was in bed with the Hound or something.
Ashley, the juicy dreams. The Sansan dreams.
Nope.
All right.
Let's see. Here.
So... Marillion gets it later on, right?
I'm trying to remember. Like, that makes you feel not as bad for him that he exactly for his like, because initially you're like, oh wow, I think he's blinded at some point and all of that. And he gets blamed for the thing, but then you realize, well, he's raped multiple people.
Oh, he gets blamed for throwing Lysa out the moon door, right?
That's right. And then so when you think that, I thought that he would have just been killed, but then I think he gets like maimed and he gets blinded later and he gets like tortured. So he tells the story, he admits his guilt and.
Yeah, I think when I first read the books, I got to that part and I was like, don't blame the poor Sager. He didn't do anything.
He actually did a lot of bad things.
Now I'm reading it and I'm like, oh, that guy. Like, yeah.
You don't feel as bad for him. I mean, obviously, it's quite the overkill, but on the other hand, he wasn't it. Right, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's him. And then, so the other is where Lysa wants to know if she's bed the dwarf or has his child. And Sansa tells her no, but she can't tell him that he was kind. She's not going to believe that. That's not going to work. So she just tells him he had whores.
Right.
Which is funny because I think Sansa's actually starting to get good at lying in this chapter as well. Like, she's kind of telling, again, half-truths. Yes, he had horrors. Now, that wasn't the only reason, but it fits and it matches what she wanted to hear. She wanted to hear he was incapable or had horrors. It's like, you see, it was a dwarf incapable. So then that worked.
Sir Vardis Egan. I got to say, that's probably one of my favorite names in the book.
Yeah.
Sir Vardis Egan. That's so badass. I like that.
Yeah, and he... Well, his son was playing. She's talking about her son, how like Vardis's son and the other people were playing, and then they were much too rough, so I had to send them away. I don't think that's the case. I think you were overprotective, and your son was.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know what his son is like. But I mean, if for example, if he had stayed with those kids, maybe it would have been better for him, right? Like he was so isolated and put in this weird state, where like he has to win everything, and he's a lord, so he has to win, or he's going to complain and go into like seizures, stuff. And then that's the very end. It's really annoying because it's like, oh, he should always win, and you're just a beggar. Your Starks are proud, but you're just a beggar now. It's like, okay.
But then he talks about marrying Sansa and her son.
I mean, that's to get the claim against the Starks, right? Like to get the claim against the North.
Right.
Potentially, because in theory, they could claim a lot of land eventually. Even Lysa is aware of that. Like, she knows that she's trying to avoid the war of all that, but she knows in the long run that could be helpful.
Oh, she loves him so much and just paints such a terrible picture of him. All right, yeah, that's that chapter.
Wasn't the actor for Robert, like this kid Robert in the show Popular or something, when he showed up as the adult form him or something.
Well, yeah, then he had a glow up, I guess the kids call it these days. He was all handsome when he showed up later.
I don't think he survives that long in the books. I think he's that. I mean, Littlefinger hints as such later on. I think he's basically he's going to be dead. He's just he's getting constantly dosed with night sleep or whatever this
potion. Oh, really?
Is. Yeah, that puts him to sleep.
Nightshade
or something like it's something that basically like puts you a little bit puts you to sleep, but a lot kills you. And also, I think it builds up in your body that it doesn't go away.
It puts you to sleep. A lot kills you.
And as you keep taking a little bit, it keeps building up. So basically, you're going to die
at some point. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So he basically said, the way he said it is so cruel. He's like, he's not long for this world. He's going to be gone soon. And then it's going to be Harry the heir that's going to take over. It's like, okay.
Is that natural or did Peter like taint his supply?
Well, I don't know. Was it called? Is it Nightshade or what is it called? I wonder if it comes up.
I feel like Nightshade is a poison.
Yeah, let's see. Let's bring up a Night's King. Sleep potion, ice and fire. Sweet sleep. Let's see. Sweet sleep is a drug that gives the gift of painless death. In small doses, nice. It can be used to moderate shaking fits. 3 doses of sweet sleep will cause the victim sleep in the sleep that they will never wake, killing them.
Oh, my God.
It has a very sweet taste.
Mm, so delicious.
You can use it as an assassin's poison. You put it in the sweet foods, and they won't be able to tell that it's in there.
Delicious.
Milk with a pinch of sweet sleep may be called sweet milk. yeah, a pinch will give a night of deep and dreamless sleep. 3 pinches will produce a sleep that does not end.
Oh, my God.
And according to Master Coleman, sweet sleep does not leave the flesh, possibly meaning that even small doses building up over time can have the dangerous effect of larger doses.
And what's the name of it again?
Sweet sleep.
Sweet sleep.
Sweet sleep, right,
I'll start taking some of that. So speaking of sleep, we're going to move on to A Storm of Swords, John, chapter 9, where John awakes from a sleep.
And he's tired. They all need a good sleep in that chapter.
Yeah. They're in the midst of being in the multi-day attack of Mance Rayder and the Wildlings against the Wall. And in this chapter, John has like a telescope thing and he looks out and he sees them building a turtle, sort of like an upside down boat, where they can come to the wall and they can break down the door and be protected. And that doesn't work out too well for them. And basically that kind of happens. And then Alistair Thorne shows up and accuses John of being like a traitor and killing Corrin Halfhand, and Maester Aemon tries to defend him, and John is ordered to be hanged. Yes. So yeah,
a faster like chapter to get through. Like it's a shorter one after that long one, but there's still some good stuff in there. Actually, one of the most interesting things of this chapter was when John is looking out and seeing everybody from the wall, and it says he's looking through an ornate brass mirrorish eye, which is basically a telescope because he says that it had been used to look at the stars. And I didn't remember this at all. I did not remember this at all, that they had telescopes.
No, me neither. I read that. I got to that part, and I was like, mirrorish eye. And I feel like I kept reading it, and I was like, what are they? Oh, this is a damp. This is a telescope.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. Took me a little bit. It's like,
I mean, I suppose it could also just be it's the same kind of technology, just some kind of binocular, like it's something not as quite as far reaching as a telescope. I mean, it was used to look at the stars, so it's that powerful, and he's really close, like a lot. So basically, I think the term like is spyscope or whatever. I mean, is it a telescope when you look at it, it is. You're just using it on terrestrial view. You're looking at, but he gets a really close view, and actually, it's smart of Martin to do that, because otherwise, like, he couldn't really see anything, right? You wouldn't be able to see these details, except with this technology, right? So that was kind of cool that he was able to see who was there and describe it to us.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out, is there any other point in the books where a telescope is used?
Well, I'm looking it up right now. It's also called a far eye. A far eye is a telescope consisting of bronze tube. The best ones come from Mir and refer to as mirrorish eyes. Maesters Lewin and Aemon both use far eyes to observe the stars.
Okay.
Victarion Greyjoy captures the Mirish Cog Dove. He takes his captain's Mirish Eye.
Yeah, I figured Victorian or
so he gets one.
His
from
brother
there.
Would have one.
It was constructed out of a series of interconnected brass tubes, so to be collapsible. So it's like a portable one. That's awesome. Like that's really cool that they have them. You think they would maybe use them more often? I guess the thing is they don't have the like. It's not like they have like a sniper that could also shoot out.
Right.
I think that to match.
Not like you can hook it up to a crossbow
to
or
act
something.
At a distance, but still just for reconnaissance and stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like they've got to be super rare, though.
Well, that's the thing. They keep calling them Mirror Shires. I mean, do they even build them here, or do they just only get them from Mirror? Like, it seems like the Free City is a little bit more sophisticated technology-wise. But cool. Cool that they have them. Cool that they're observing the stars, right? Like, that's...
Yeah. Watching that comet.
Cool.
So,
you get that view, and you see there all the different characters that are there now, right? Like, he recognizes Mance Rayder and... Val's there and Skin Changer, everyone, like they're all walking around.
Yeah, Tormund and his kids.
That's right. And so you see them building the turtles. That's part of the main part of the chapter, is dreading that the turtle's going to be coming soon. And everyone's tired. They're out of, like, they're low on arrows. They're out of various, I think they're out of oil or pitch. They know that they only got limited time left.
Right.
And a lot of people have died. Like Bowen Marsh had charged and chased some wildlings somewhere, lost a lot of men, so they don't have much reinforcement or any reinforcements at the moment. People have left Molestown. John considered.
Yeah, that seems weird. Like, why did you go out there?
Well, that was the problem, I think, initially. The whole problem was that they had lured them over there. That was part of Mance's plan, is lure the main force away with other people, like, testing other areas of wall and then hit here. And
okay.
But why would you then follow them and actually engage in combat? I don't know. Like, it wasn't worth it. Like, exactly. You have to preserve your numbers to just go on foot and fight, and he lost 100 men. That's a huge loss.
Yeah, that's huge.
You can't afford 100. Like, each man is worth like 100 on the wall shooting down, right? That ratio, and he lost 100. That's a huge loss. So, I mean, they would have lost the wall if it hadn't been for John anyway. He came to warn them, and then all that, right? Like, all that has already happened already. The earlier battles in this area. So, which is relevant to later. That comes at the end of the chapter. Is John a traitor? It's like, well, no. If John hadn't come here, the Mance Rayder would be here.
He
would take it over. So John very briefly considers, like, well, maybe we should just be leaving as well, because if we're going to lose, that's kind of interesting. But he doesn't go with that mindset, but somebody else could have done that, just given up.
Easily could have. I love the scarecrow type things they have on top of the wall to make their numbers look a little bigger.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But they've got a bet about which one will get hit the most.
But also just the description of the various defenses they have. Like, they have scorpions and catapults. The trebuchet is damaged. One of them, the other one can't reach there, but it's kind of cool.
Yep.
But
I really like when they take out the turtle, how they fill a barrel full of rocks, and then they pour liquid in it and freeze it.
Yeah.
For some reason, this is one of the and there are quite a few images, but this image in particular is one that I remember, like, that stuck out to me when I first read the books. And I always, whenever I think of the battle on the wall, like them battling on top of the wall, I always remember, oh, there's a barrel full of rocks that they freeze hard with water. And I was just reading this last night, and I was like, oh, this is the moment. I've always thought that was pretty cool. Like,
so
a
you
neat
remember
thing.
That it happened, but you just don't remember where it happened, because there's so many mini battles going
exactly.
on. But it's pretty good. It's a cool use of just, I mean, basic science, right? Like, using water and ice to your advantage to add to the weight and hold the rocks together, and it worked.
And it makes sense. He's like, why are we doing this? And he goes, well, if it breaks halfway down, all the rocks are just going to, like, they're just going to rain upon them. Like, we
It puts it together, like, it turns it into, like, a single boulder and adds some more weight to it, too. Why not? And for, like, you still got the water and it's frozen and... It's cool. Like it,
and it ends up working really well.
It does.
You hear the crack. I love the imagery of not being able to look directly down.
Yeah.
So they drop it off and they're like, fingers crossed. And then all of a sudden they hear crack and screaming, and then they can see everybody running away. It's like, oh, that's a cool image.
And John is like, oh, I wish we had hoardings here. Like, you can't really effectively look over and do much there. Like, it's dangerous.
Now, a hoarding, is that kind of like, a structure that hangs out over the wall?
Yeah,
so
that's
like,
kind of
it over.
Is. I was trying to look at the exact definition. It talks about a wooden shed-like construction that goes over the edge of the rampart or goes to the edge. It's just building something on the edge of the building. Yeah, it's wooden. It doesn't necessarily have to be wooden, but it's something that lets you go over the edge and shoot out from it and have a better view safely.
It's kind of like that glass. It's like a glass thing at the Grand Canyon that you can walk out over the Grand Canyon, and it's got a glass bottom.
That's right.
You can look down.
It provides both easier access to the edge, but also just protects you as like it looks like at least the design here. It looks like it's for archers shooting through. I guess they could also have a more open spot to roll something underneath, but just some way to do it rather than just be on the edge of a wall. he almost falls over, I think, or he's like he has to be pulled back at some point.
Mm.
Oh, and he also even melts a little bit of the ice to make the barrels roll better. That was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
So then they do that, and so then Pip has the wall this time.
And Pip's like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah, he's giving the wall to Pip and to Gwen, I think, at another time. Then he goes back, and then some of these men have come back from Eastwatch, I guess, right? Alistair Thorne is there, and Janos Lint has shown up, and apparently he thinks he's in command. Now it's like, what?
Oh, boy.
And thankfully, Master Naemon is there to speak for John to help him there a bit, but it's just...
Doesn't do much
because they're still accusing him of being a traitor and all that. I mean, he has... I think the answers he gives would have been sufficient to at least... stall him a bit, but then they have Rattleshirt as a witness, right? They've captured Rattleshirt,
right.
And he says that he killed Corrin, and then of course Corrin commanded him to do. I mean, Corrin knew that was going to happen, but they're not going to believe that.
Yeah, but come on, if we were here in this position, John would look so guilty.
That's right. That's entirely right. Like, why would
I know John's the hero, and we can't help but side with him, but like trying to look at this from a third party perspective, it's like, yeah, Alistair Thorne, That John is a fucking traitor. Like, he slept with a wildling. He hung out with him for a while. He killed one of the greatest black brothers, you know? And shit.
Objectively, there's a good case for John being viewed as a traitor. Now, of course, Thorne isn't even objective, right? So it's even stronger to him. Like, he hates John. But yeah, there is a good case there for John being viewed a traitor. Except for the fact that if he was truly a traitor... then you have to then he wouldn't have helped hold the wall. These guys weren't there to see it happen. They just heard third party accounts.
But why would he be doing all this?
Well, I mean, look at the end result of this. Let's go. We'll talk about the rest of the chapter. But like, John is not. I mean, I guess he's kind of forced to. They don't kill him. They can't just kill him. They don't have authority to do that. They kind of force him to go into that parlay thing. But after that, like, they don't have no real authority over him. But they're threatening him now. But I guess we didn't know that when you read the chapter, right? That what happens later. But
yeah.
So then, yeah, they're talking about that, and they're even twisting. Oh, he wouldn't take the oaths before, like, in the Sept. He went to the North, and then Aemon's like, "They're the gods of the North." Aemon's like his lawyer here.
I know. Aemon's like, "What are you guys talking? You guys are idiots."
John has a good line where he's like, "I don't know what your skull is stuffed with, my lord." It's like, what do you think? A skull is stuffed with cabbages. The lords know is nothing but if not arrogant, Sir Alistair. And then what's interesting, and you know these Starks well, my lord. It seems like, he doesn't like Starks, Alistair. I mean, obviously, Janos doesn't. And they're like, Benjen Stark may be with Mance. Like, really? I guess Alistair really hated the Starks in general.
Mm.
Or maybe he didn't like Benjen. Maybe Benjen took the promotion he wanted. Could be. First Ranger. So then they're insulting John, and then John, he's like, whatever, say what you want about me, but I'm not going to let you insult my father. And then John just grabs Alistair by the throat.
Oh, shit. Now,
this is a dragon rage moment. Like, the hint, like, John, because some of his Targaryens go into a rage, and they're pretty aggressive and powerful. So he just, like, picks him off the floor and, like, tries to throttle him, and he has to be, like, gang up on a few people to pull him off, so... That's kind of a dragon rage moment, hint of John's heritage.
Mm.
And that's it. So it's a shorter chapter, but shows that John's got he's got some enemies now. They're back at the wall, so.
Yep. It does. Awesome.
Cool.
Well, here we go. We have covered the chapters.
No Ashley, unfortunately. Is she all nine? Nope, she's still away. Ashley. Fell asleep, probably.
Oh, well. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of A Podcast of Ice and Fire. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at APOIAF and join our forums, join the discussion, and we'll be back again with the next chapters.
Yeah, see you next time.
Have a good one.
That was fun.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah, let's keep our chapter reread going. It's just fun, even if we do one every once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Keep it alive.
Yeah. Got to get to the end of Storm of Swords, at least.
I know. Let's see, we just ended...
Not that many chapters. 787 is the... And then what does it go to?
Let's see. 960 for me, and it goes to...
It's like 1120 for me, but this is a big size book.
That's 60, good. So like 150 pages.
Yeah, that sounds about right. 120 for me, but this is the largest size paperback type book, like the large half paper. Like it's giant paperback, right? It's not hardcover, but
oh shit, fancy.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me.
Cool, man. Good talking with you.
Awesome.
And,
same.
We'll do another two chapters. We'll see when next time Ashley's available. Try to get that going.
Sounds good, man.
And Orville, when it comes out, I'll wait for the maybe season 3 to come out, or when it's about to come out, we can do
an Orville episode. I gotta figure out how I'm gonna watch Hulu. I'll probably get it with Disney Plus.
Do you have anyone else who has Hulu you could watch with, or that's an option?
Not off the top of my head, but I might get Disney Plus, so maybe I'll.
Does that include Hulu with it? Then I guess.
It will. It does. It includes ESPN and Hulu.
Okay.
Cool.
Good chatting with you, man. Cheers.
All right, man. You have a good night, and I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, see ya.
Peace.
Hey guys.
Yo.
Sorry I'm late. Is Ashley here? Man.
I don't think so.
Let's see.
You can hear me fine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did she respond to the email? She said she think. Or maybe she's in a different account. Let's see. Who's online?
Is she on Skype? I can't decipher the Skype. Ramin, you still there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I'm just going to use these. The old wired ones. These headphones would be good on a plane. So how you been, man?
Good. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. It's been weird. It's been a weird couple months.
When's the last you were? Was the last time you were on the podcast? Was that for the last episode, or were you on since then? I'm trying to see.
I don't know. Good question. All I know is I had to skip over quite a few chapters to find the ones we were going to talk about. That's always an indication because I have my bookmarks in. I'm like, okay, what's that? Oh, nope, not that one. So I might have missed like. Two or three episodes.
No. It's almost post Game of Thrones time now. Like it's kind of faded, right? Like the show. It was burning for a few months. People were pissed off, and then.
nobody really talks about it now. Yeah. I came across an article where people on Twitter, where someone asked, like, "What are the worst show endings?" And. Mostly people were saying, like, you know, Dexter and other ones that really had bad endings. But then I got to, like, the Game of Thrones part, and I was just like, oh, give me a break. There have been much worse endings.
But it's nice in a way to have it all. Wait, is that me messaging or someone else? No, never mind. What the heck? There's, like, all these different options in here. Schedule a call. Create a poll. Let's schedule a call. Is it, like, an auto call or something?
Probably.
Calling Ashley. We'll give it another shot. If not, I mean, we can still do it. You've read the chapters. I've read the chapters. We can still do it ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Getting up earlier these days.
But you didn't, yeah, you weren't there at Comic-Con, right? You didn't come down for this
year. I was, no, I did not make it down at all. How was it?
Yeah, it was good. I guess you weren't there for the recap. So we had a recap episode. We talked about it. One of the cool things I did was there was a whole like Dragon Ball event there, like the at the Marriott Hotel. They kind of like this the outside of it. They turned it into like the just Dragon Ball. But they had all this like figure, like the giant size figures you take pictures with, and like free items, and then you could see the figures and stuff if you want to buy them. And then there was a Guinness Book of World Records like gathering for Dragon Ball.
Really?
Yeah, we just had a group of people doing a Kamehameha, like the motion for it.
Okay.
And then we had like it was like I don't know 700 or 800 people doing it. It was pretty awesome.
Oh, holy cow! Yeah.
So I got to go in for that. That was like the very first. That was like Wednesday night. I went to that and got in as press earlier and in there. It was cool.
Awesome. That's great.
Cool. And then what else? Oh, do you watch the Orville?
I do.
Yeah, there was an Orville experience.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah. That seemed like something I was bummed I didn't go down for.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best. I mean, other good stuff is at Comic-Con, but yeah, that was one of the best ones, I think, because especially since we got to get in as press. Like, I emailed them because that's the thing we learned from Game of Thrones experiences. I don't want to wait in lines. So I emailed them and I asked, do you have an option for press, like a press night or a press early? And they said, oh, yeah, we're having a press-only event. The first day or Thursday or something. And so I RSVP'd for that. And Ashley came as well. I don't think she'd even watched the Orville. And so Tara had, and she came. And it was good. They had like, maybe there was like 40 or 50 people there in kind of what looked like almost like maybe an art gallery converted to it, like a couple of rooms.
Yep.
Converted to it. They had all the images and pictures.
Eric Bortis's pile of cigarettes were there.
Yeah, that's right. And like little figures and stuff. And then and for that, press event, they had like appetizers. They had appetizers. They had drinks. It was nice. It was a very nice event.
Nice.
And then they even had like really good cosplayers showed up, almost to the extent that I think we figured that they actually may have been extras in the show. It very likely could have been extras of the show because they came up like in the full gear from the show of
yeah, but extras don't get to keep the outfits when they go home.
That's right, but I think they may have been approved to do so. Like the way it was organized, almost like they didn't just like come in randomly. They kind of
came. Okay, so they were like. Paid extras.
Yeah, exactly. Like set up as part of the show for that thing, and they came a couple times of the weekend as well. I think, yeah, exactly. They don't keep the suit, but they were regular extras or whoever it was. Maybe they weren't on the show, but they were hired to come and wear the costumes of the show. I mean, like they were formally there. I don't think they were just cosplayers who made it themselves.
Okay,
and that was really cool. And then there was like some little photo thing you could do, just kind of like Game of Thrones. You can get your photo. Or get this clip thing. And then on the other day, then I got an email saying that the cast would be there on the Saturday. And so that day, people were just randomly there. They didn't know the cast would be there, but then the press all showed up. And so the cast came in and took some photos and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you went back for the cast?
I did. I went back for the Saturday for that thing. And that was nice. So it was really crowded. So you couldn't, they kind of came for pictures and left. But it was still cool to see them. And then I got a picture with the doctor's kids.
Okay.
They came because they were a little bit earlier. They just came and started hanging out with people in the crowd. So I got a picture with them.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice. And they're quite nice.
How much of the cast came?
Pretty much everyone. Like the whole main cast were there for that. Oh, they came in, like they were brought in from a side door, and then they came in, they took photos, and then Seth had like an interview with somebody, and then they left. So they didn't really disperse in the crowd, but it was still nice to see them there.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what we covered in the episode. Awesome. It was
hey, good. Did I tell you that a friend of mine had a part on Orville?
No, he didn't. One of the, like the extras kind of like thing, or?
Yep. I'm trying to remember the episode. It's a short scene where the redheaded guy is in the mess hall and he flirts with some crew member we haven't seen before.
Oh yeah,
like this cute blonde girl. And she had a couple lines or something like that. And that was my friend.
Oh, nice. That's awesome to be on. Like, Orville is the new Star Trek, basically. Like, the good version.
And then, yeah, exactly.
But I will mention now, since we're chatting, just Orville in general. Like, that's a show that when the next season comes out, I'd be up for doing, like, a Bastards of Kingsgate episode on that. Like, into it. Actually, into it now.
Yeah, I'd be down for talking about it. Although, next season's going to be on Hulu, and I don't have Hulu. So.
Mm. And it's not coming for a while, too, is the problem, right? I don't think it's... My guess is not coming till...
Well, it's always a bit of a shakeup when you change, like, networks, sort of. And also, yeah, I don't know. There is going to be a next season.
Let's see. I wonder if they have, well, I'm searching season three to see if there's any hint of when it may be
coming. Dude, the Kalon episodes. Oh,
that was high. That was like the best of both worlds type, like two-parter. Like, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and that scene where the Orville is flying down into the city.
Yeah.
Like, I've never paused a show on like network television before and went, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. That's beautiful.
It doesn't say the air date. I thought it was something like maybe late 2020, not even early 2020, something like that. But it doesn't say. Let's see. The season three has been delayed. Let's see. I would determine that I would not be able to deliver episodes until 2020. Okay, well, so he's still aiming for 2020, I take it. Just don't know the exact date. So, well, that makes sense, because when did season two end? Season two ended recently. Like, I guess if it was a normal show, they would expect it in the fall, right? But he said, I want to be able to deliver. So we could be not that far away. Okay, it's actually not. I'm going to give one more dial to Ashley, and then we're going to get started.
All right. Let's do that.
Nice. That must have been an awesome experience to get in the Orville.
Yeah, and the day she was on it, I wasn't working, and they were looking for background to play. They were looking for extras.
Yeah,
just, and they only want extras who have like makeup experience, aka they're going to put a whole bunch of alien makeup on you, and they want people who are okay with wearing it all day long.
That's right.
And so I was like, yeah. So I applied, and I was like, I was trying to get it.
Oh, nice.
And I wanted to. My dream was to show up, get put in alien makeup, and be unrecognizable, and then be in the scene with my friend and her not knowing, and then like texting her during lunch and being like, hey, you were great in that, and her being like freaking out.
Man, get Kyle on the Orville. That should be our next push. That would be awesome.
Yeah, she was such a big part of it because of her help in the penultimate episode that they invited her to the rap party and gave her,
seem to have a very good the actors get along very well, like, which is good. I mean, that was the same thing with the Next Generation. Like, if you get the actors start to like each other, hang out, and that's good. That reinforces the show, I think, like the connection with each other and stuff. It's good.
But the redhead guy and Adrian Palicki were dating, and then
who's Adrian Palicki again? That's
the number one.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, but ooh, they just recently broke up.
Well,
so I don't know if they like got married or something. I'm not sure. And then quickly divorced. Sounds like a Hollywood story.
Well, that was a rumor that Seth was dating like the first security chief girl.
Is that why she left?
People thought, but I mean, and he was dating her, I think. But it seems to be that wasn't the reason why she left. Like, she just wanted that wasn't the cause, which would have sucked if that was the cause. I said, get over it and just keep acting. I don't care. Put your personal sides. I don't think that was the reason. It was either she wanted to just go on other shows, or I think somebody else had analyzed, or somebody had said, like, they wanted a character that was older or something, or more experienced. I was like, well, then you just develop that character. She was perfectly placed for that role. Yeah. She starts young, develop her over time. But in any event,
I like her, but I like the new one too.
New one's fine, and the old one can still come in for guest shows or whatever, so it's okay.
Right.
Yeah. The Orville is like Star Trek. It's a show that anyone would want to just be there in the background for a clip or something. Like Stephen Hawking wanted to be Star Trek, remember?
Yes. And he was. okay, do we want to do this?
Yeah,
and
let's
then
do this.
If Ashley pops in?
Sure, exactly. Okay. I sent the email, so yeah, if she comes on, she can join us.
All right.